We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Model Majority Podcast, where we talk about politics, culture, and life through the eyes of three Asian American former field organizers. I am your co-host, Tony Nagatani.
And I am your co-host, Kevin Hsu. This is a special Nevada caucus episode because our guest today is Tony Nagatani, your co-host, who is actually in Nevada.
Bright Light City's gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Yeah, coming to you live from Las Vegas, Nevada right about now.
So Tony right now is actually in Las Vegas. We are taping on Saturday, February the 22nd, which is the Nevada caucus day. In fact, the winner was just called. It was Bernie Sanders. But Tony was actually on the ground helping out for the last few days, including today, the caucus day itself. So we're going to do this special episode to walk through some of Tony's experiences, eh?
Yeah, that sounds good to me. Just I got to say, Kevin, let's just launch right into it. Screw all the plugs. Everybody knows who listens to this podcast knows about all that sort of stuff right now. But it is good to be back in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I love being in this state. I love being in Las Vegas generally. And I really had an excellent experience volunteering around the Nevada caucus today. And I'm really, really glad that I got to do it.
Right. So let's get into our conversation then. First of all, I guess, why did you decide to do this? And how did it all come about? Like, what happened that led you to take a couple of days of work off, potentially, and your entire weekend to drive from LA, where you live, to Las Vegas to do this?
Well, it all comes down to this. I watched what happened in Iowa during the Iowa caucus a few weeks ago and was
yes.
completely disgusted with how awful the party apparatus sort of screwed things up with the reporting app and, you know, all the ambiguity that came out of there. It really made the Democratic Party look bad, and not just in how, you know, we didn't know the results for days, but also then in the fallout amongst all of the candidate supporters. It became sort of like a real S show, as if you know what I mean. And I was actually sick one day looking at the results. I was sitting in urgent care with strep throat, and I realized how awful Iowa came out, and I was like, I just can't let that happen for the next caucus state, because, you know, I had to do something. And so usually when I work on campaigns, Kevin, I'm working on behalf of a particular candidate. But in this particular instance, seeing exactly how bad the Democratic Party of Iowa screwed up that caucus, I went in with the mindset that I wanted to volunteer not for the candidate, but for the party, to do whatever I could to ensure a good caucus experience. And so, yeah, as you said, I took a day off work and drove out. I recruited two other volunteers to drive out with me from LA, and we came out here to Nevada and you know, volunteered in various facets for the party, and it was a very different sort of experience, because it wasn't just annoying people to get out to vote, you know.
Nice. So walk us through that initial preparation then. A lot of what we do on this podcast is to demystify all these various facets of campaigning and organizing and getting involved, so that more people can feel very comfortable and confident inserting themselves into the process and participate if they feel like it, right? Kind of like what you were doing after watching the Iowa caucus debacle. But who did you contact the party? Did you, like, know people there that let you figure out what to do once you actually get to Vegas?
One of the advantages of having been a field organizer for Barack Obama in 2007 and 2008 is that I know a lot of people who grew up to be very serious political people. And so when I saw what happened in Iowa, it was very easy for me. Actually, what I did is I when I made the decision, I got to do something. And I made the decision then it's going to be for the party and not for a candidate. I got on Twitter, of all places, and I began DMing every single person I knew who was somewhat affiliated with the Nevada Democratic Party, just looking for, you know, a contact. And so I literally DM'd a bunch of friends saying, hey, I'm going to go to Nevada. Do you want to come too? Hey, who do I talk to? How do I get plugged in? And it, you know, it took about 24 hours and I got plugged in with ultimately the Nevada State Democratic Party's organizers, who at that point put my name down on a list. And I said, yes, I want to volunteer. And they were like, that's great. Come. They didn't tell me exactly what or when, but luckily I also have that organizing background. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go. I'll take it on faith that they're going to have something for me to do. So I just then planned my trip, and then I tried to get as many of my friends to come as possible. I was really trying to get the old gang back together again, like the cavalry coming in to save the party. And you know, I got a couple of folks to come along, but it was really just reaching out to my friends. And the thing, I know that kind of sounds maybe elitist in a sense, because I was able to sort of just, oh, hey, get plugged in really fast. But all anyone really had to do was just call the Nevada State Democratic Party and say, hey, I want to help. And they would have taken down your name and then begin sending you emails. And so it really isn't that hard. It's just raising your hand and saying, hey, I want to help for free, you know?
Right. Because I think even though you obviously knew people and you've been in politics for a long time, specifically in Nevada, actually, that contact was helpful to an extent, but I don't think it's at all a prerequisite, right, for anyone to just reach out to the party, literally go on their website, probably find like a common phone number, and then just call them and be like, hey, I am so-and-so. I want to come help out the party to help you do this caucus thing, whatever you want me to get plugged in. And then they will be glad to take your name down and encourage you to come. Does that sound right?
That's exactly right. And I'll say the Nevada Democratic Party does have its act together and has for basically the last decade. There's an online volunteer sign-up form that they're pretty responsive on as well. So, you know, they know how to harness grassroots people if they step forward and say, hey, I do want to help. So
right.
Very big credit to that party.
So even before you started driving to Nevada, it's not like you actually knew what you were going to be doing once you get there, right?
Well, having experience of running a Nevada caucus for President Obama on the precinct level, you know, being a you know, essentially, you know, an organizer in charge of multiple precinct captains in 2008, I was familiar with the sorts of things that were going to be needed to make a caucus run. So I knew there was definitely going to be needs for precinct chairs, and understanding that across the entire state of Nevada, there's like thousands of precincts across the entire state, that every single precinct needs to have a neutral representative on site in order to conduct the business of the caucus. And I figured at the very, very least, what I would be doing would be sent to a caucus site to administer one of these caucus locations. Because I knew people, I got some interesting volunteer opportunities. But I took the trainings for the run up to the caucus as if I was going to run one of the caucus sites. But I ended up doing some different stuff.
So tell us about these trainings that you were part of. Then you got to Vegas, you checked into your hotel, and then what did they do as the party to help you get situated or to give you assignments and making sure you know what to do, even though you knew what to do because of your experience? I'm sure most of the people who were there didn't actually know what to do, but just had time and really wanted to be helpful.
Yeah, that is great. Well, actually, my training began before I even left Los Angeles. About a week after I signed up to volunteer, the Nevada State Democratic Party sent me a video conference link saying on Saturday at 10 a.m. be on this link. We're going to have a caucus chair training. And so I sat on a Saturday morning for 2 hours and was on a video chat where they gave me the overview, the caucus 101 sorts of stuff. But it also gave me a window in to sort of see, you know, how effective that the Nevada Democratic Party was. And to be honest with you, I was expecting a lot less than what I got in terms of professionalism and preparedness in that training, but they did a very good job with that video training, even from the beginning of getting the information out there, you know, really good training directors and things like that. And getting, you know, I mean, there were 35 or 40 people on that particular training, and, you know, I didn't speak or anything, but they had a good back and forth with like a chat box and learning about the Nevada specific viability thresholds and how there's actually two different viability thresholds for Nevada, depending upon how many or how few delegates a particular precinct is worth. So, you know, it's either 15% or 25%, depending on you know, how many people live in the precinct. So, it, you know, all those sorts of little details were given to me. And, you know, again, I took it on faith that they were going to ultimately have a something for me to do, because they didn't actually give me an assignment until I got boots on the ground here. You know, I was just assuming, oh, hey, I'm going to go run a precinct. And then I showed up to where, you know, I was then told when to arrive, the day that I arrived, to go to a high school for an in-person caucus training. And I went to that, and that was it was great. It was remedial, because it was pretty much the exact same training that I got on the internet, but it was nice to do it a second time. And then also I got to meet, I think, you know, the DNC dropped in some training staff and some support staff in the final few weeks. I think probably also as a reaction to how poorly the Iowa caucus went. So I got to meet the DNC training director who led that particular caucus training, and kind of took it from there. And yeah, it was again very good training, and you know, hanging out with the volunteers and listening to all the questions that the volunteers bring up is it's always something that makes me mm-hmm. smile, and you know, yeah, it's good stuff.
it brings good memories, I hope, about volunteer training. Yep, from back yep. in the days.
Felt like good old times, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So one of the things that I know you did as well before caucus day itself, which we will talk about, is also doing some phone banking for the Democratic Party of Nevada. Can you tell us what those calls are even for? Because I think a lot of people probably know that you do phone banking for a candidate's campaign. If you're volunteering, you're either going out to knock on doors, or you're going to do phone calls to reach out to voters. I obviously talked a lot about the Iowa caucus knocking on door experience. We've all had that experience before. But what is the calls or the phone banking for a party supposed to be for?
Well, so yeah, after my training, they told me to go to the Nevada State Democratic Party headquarters and just do whatever they say. So I walk in the door. It was a bustling campaign office. It smelled like a campaign office. The air conditioning was turned off, and there were kids with laptops and phones. And I was like, okay, this, now I feel at home. But the calls that I was making, as you say, Kevin, unlike when you're working for a candidate's campaign, you're recruiting volunteers to knock on doors, and also to be precinct captains for the candidate. That means someone who's going to be representing the candidate at the caucus. There's something similar going on with the party, because every single caucus location, as I said, needs that person who's going to function as the precinct chair, this neutral arbiter of power on the caucus location. And so the party has to recruit, you know, however many hundreds or thousands of people to actually go to each individual caucus on caucus day and preside over the caucus. So the calls that I was making were people who had signed up to volunteer to be what's called a temporary caucus chair. So I was given a virtual phone bank, and I was told to call through all this list of volunteers who said that they were going to show up in caucus, and not just caucus, but to run their caucus. And I had to call through to verify if they were actually showing up, and then making sure that they knew about the training, and making sure they knew when, what time, like where their caucus location was, all that sort of stuff. And that was as fun as most reconfirmation calls go. But it was kind of funny, because there was a bit of a flake rate. That is, people who said they were going to be precinct chairs who ended up not being precinct chairs. And that was interesting too.
And that happened literally the day before caucus day. Like the day before caucus day, there were people, a few people, hopefully, that actually said, "Nah, I'm not gonna actually run this caucus."
Yeah, so you know, I went about my calls as I use in my normal jolly way, reconfirming people, explaining, "Oh yes, you're gonna be there at 9 a.m." And they're like, "Oh wait, what? What? I gotta be there when?" It was, you know, so, and then people, you know, and they're, "Oh wait, I'm just gonna go for the caucus then." I'm like, "Okay, well, fine. Make sure you go out and caucus." But yeah, there were plenty of people who were like, "Oh no, I didn't mean to actually do that, so I'm not actually gonna be there." And so, luckily, it wasn't my job to replace those people. It was just to get the list of where it needed to be replaced, you know, like which so I didn't have to actually find the volunteers that would then be plugged in the stead of those people. But you know, it is a little disconcerting when you think someone's a confirmed, when someone is marked as a confirmed, you know, precinct chair, and they're like, "Oh no, never mind, I'm not." You know, you're always like, "Okay, but we've talked to you 3 days ago. I can see this. We talked to you 3 days ago, and you said yes before. But okay, you took the training, but now you're not." So, you know, I guess that's just volunteering.
That's just how it goes, right? Yeah. Right. But they did have a contingency plan, it sounds like, to plug in volunteers who had the capacity to become temporary precinct chairs when the supposed temporary precinct chairs flaked out.
Yep, yep. I was actually very impressed because, you know, it's not a very glamorous thing to volunteer for the state party, especially in a presidential year when there are candidates like Elizabeth Warren and Mayor Pete Buttigieg and, you know, and Joe Biden out there that you know, might be inspiring to some people, you know. But and I was amazed that there were actually a lot of out-of-state volunteers, especially from California, who, like me, drove out. I think they might have gotten the APB from, you know, from Harry Reid or something, saying, hey, we need some more volunteers, and a bunch of people just showed up, you know, at 10 p.m. last night to the SCIU hall, and were like, "All right, I'll volunteer." And in those cases, everybody had to sign a disclosure of a neutrality agreement to make sure that they were not going to be for a particular candidate, and then they were then trained as precinct chairs and were given their assignments. And where there were gaps from the Nevada volunteers, that, you know, other states' volunteers stepped up and presided over a lot of these caucus sites.
Right, and just so folks don't have that context, Harry Reid was the senior senator from the state of Nevada as well as the Senate Majority Leader, and he was instrumental in bringing Nevada as an early voting state to the third spot in the entire calendar, so that it's receiving the kind of prominence and attention that it's getting right now. And we had a really good conversation with Phil Kim, who used to run Nevada for Cory Booker's campaign, I think 2-3 episodes ago. So, you know, give a listen to that too if you want kind of like the history behind why Nevada caucus is the way it is today. All right.
Actually, believe it or not, Kevin, Phil Kim was in my phone bank. He showed up while I was in the middle of making calls, so I didn't get a chance to say hi, but I was, oh, there he is, you know, I kind of waved,
wow.
But yeah, it was pretty funny, but yeah.
Small world,
but he was also busy, so he was doing, I'm sure he had other things he was helping the party out with too, so, you know.
Got it. Okay, so let's fast forward to caucus day, which is today as we're recording, but who knows when it will be when you guys actually start listening to this episode, but just literally give us a TikTok, like, what time did you wake up? What did you do? What did you have to do the whole day? And what did you end up doing and then finishing before you went back to your hotel to record this podcast with me?
Well, so because I have a background as a field organizer, you know, and doing, you know, like higher level organizing stuff, rather than place me inside of a precinct, they had me be what is called a hotline volunteer. So adjacent to where the party leadership sits during the caucus proceedings, there is a big room where there is, you know, about 100 people who were just like me, volunteers who were campaign kids, essentially, with phones and laptops. And the caucus is a big, complicated, you know, kind of messy process. And so a lot of times there is confusion about rules or caucus math or, you know, heck, you know, the Nevada Democratic Party did a lot of the tallying of the caucuses using iPads that were distributed to every single caucus location. So if your iPad was busted or if, you know, a senior citizen might not know how to type in things on an iPad, there's any number of things that you might need a volunteer sitting on a hotline to talk somebody through in order to get through the whole caucus process. So I was sitting in a big room of people while the caucus was going on, you know, receiving these and many times frantic calls from precinct chairs and site leads who were simultaneously receiving caucus attendees and trying to sign everybody in, register the voters, doing all the party business, and then also later on as they were doing their caucus alignments and then doing the math. So the thing of it is that this is something that, you know, it needs a little bit of training to understand the ways that you're going to be helping these people. So my day today started off, I woke up at 5 a.m. and I was, I had to report to the Rio Hotel in Las Vegas, which is where the Democratic Boiler Room ended up being. The boiler room is where the leadership sits, but I was in their phone banking room, essentially, at the Rio Hotel at about 6:30 in the morning to receive my hotline training. And once we received that training was from 6:30 until 8, and then they funneled us into the actual room where it was just, you know, rows and rows and rows of tables and with power strips, and we plugged in our laptops and our phones, and we, you know, the The precinct chairs were told to arrive at the caucus locations by 7:30 a.m. So by about 8 a.m., our phones began to ring, and I was assigned to the tech hotline, which means, you know, the calls that were supposed to be funneled my way were ones that were having to do with explaining how to work the technology, or, you know, so. But, you know, it ends up being a hodgepodge of calls that you get because, you know, you got to understand volunteers are calling in. So a technical problem to a volunteer could be, you know, caucus math, even though there's a number you're supposed to press for the caucus math specialists or for the, you know, for all the, you know. But so I answered a lot of different kinds of questions, but I was supposed to be getting questions about how to turn on your iPad. It was really the kinds of things I was expecting. You know? Yeah.
Okay.
So
interesting. Interesting. And so the calls, these volunteer call receivers, such as yourself, they were actually divided into different functions and categories. Like, there was supposed to be a number for technical issues that goes to people like you, and then for the caucus math issues, goes to somebody else, and then there might be some other topic. Basically, it is categorized, even though people didn't end up using things that way in the end.
Right. Right. Well, and understanding that it kind of became a hodgepodge of people. It was like, oh, you're in this corner. Why don't you just, you know, because it ends up being everybody who was in that room was had some form of previous political experience, or else that's kind of how they ended up in that room, you know? So everybody could probably talk about everything. So it was more like, okay, you're close to that side of the room. Why don't you just stay there? And there were people who were like, I don't want to do math. And so they walked over to the logistics table or something, you know, but I was just like, all right, I'm in the tech area. So I'll just stay here because this is where I am. And this is where I'm needed, I guess. And that's where I was, you know?
I got another question for you. How many of these callers, roughly speaking, were doing this with you? Because I think one of the large issues that got exposed in the Iowa caucus debacle that was revealed later, which is that there were 12 people manning the phone hotline, the same function that you were involved in, which obviously wasn't enough. And then people weren't even getting their calls returned, and they didn't even report the results, and they just went home and went to bed that night. It sounded like you guys had more capacity than 12 people.
Yeah, I tell you, you know, it's funny. There were 12 people doing tech calls, you know, so, and we were the smallest group. So just to put that in perspective, you know, a friend of the podcast, Punya Krishnappa, you know, she was helping out with the caucus math side. And that was, I think, the math and logistics people had the most. But there were more than, if I were to estimate, it would be between, like, I'd say 50 and 80, I think. I don't know. I don't want to get the numbers wrong. It was a significant amount of experienced phone bankers who were sitting in this room. It was a ballroom. It was half of a big ballroom that was full of desks, and it was pretty much all manned up. So it was, you know, more than 50 people were in that room ready to receive calls. And it was very highly organized. Like, we had a dial pad app that would funnel the various kinds of calls to the various kinds of volunteers. And at the same time, all the volunteers were trained up on the same sets of stuff. So even if we got the wrong call, we could all sort of address things in the same way. And there was also leadership there. You know, there were several site leads, and, you know, actually there were some pretty big wigs from the DNC technology department that I knew when I was an intern for the DNC data department, who were probably the ones who were on the back end doing all the designing of the Google Doc. It was ultimately run on Google Docs, but, you know, doing all the back end work. And everybody was very on the ball, and I think everybody knew kind of what was at stake and how important it was that we didn't screw it up. And so everyone was a little stern, and they took their jobs very, very seriously, and really it was a good experience, and made me feel a lot better about the party leadership, quite frankly. And, you know, this was a lot, you know, it was a mixture of Nevada state folks, and also there were a good amount of, like, national political people who came in to help out too. But it, you know, there was authority. Everybody, you know, everybody there who was in authority felt like they should be there. There was no Mickey Mousing of the system, at least from the people who I was working directly with in the state party operations area, you know?
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, I guess one silver lining out of Iowa is that everyone is taking their job extra seriously.
At least caucus states, right?
At least caucus states, which thankfully we don't have that many. But I do want to talk about that, actually. You know, now that you're done with your day, you're done with your volunteering experience in general, the results have also been called. Bernie really crushed the field in this one. Like, he was supposed to win going into it, and he did win by quite a bit, right? I think right now I'm looking at the result. He has 54% of the county delegate count, which is what you count out of these caucuses. Joe Biden has 18%, which is number two. And then Elizabeth Warren has 10%. And then the rest is, you know, all single digits. So Bernie really ruled the field. Give me a sense of kind of contrasting this experience maybe with your literally very first political experience, which is the 2008 Nevada caucus, right? If I remember that correctly, and many, many years has passed since. How do you feel about the caucus itself in Nevada? Is it run better? Is it run worse? Is it run just kind of the same? What do you think about the integrity of the process in general?
I think every presidential year that they have done the Nevada caucus, it has gotten better for the Democrats just through experience alone. I knew Bernie Sanders was going to win the Nevada caucus before I even set foot in the states, just looking at how he was polling. And the real reason why, though, is because Nevada, this caucus cycle, added an early caucusing feature, just like early vote. So literally over 70,000 Democrats caucused before caucus day. And to put that in perspective, I believe it was like 80-something thousand people caucused in 2016. So already we had, you know, 7/8 of the turnout of the last major presidential election cycle turning out before caucus day. So, you know, already you could see the apparatus was a lot better shape. And so my first experience in 2008 was the very, very first Nevada caucus that there was, you know, so nobody knew how to caucus. It was all modeled on Iowa. And also at that point in the race, there were really only three candidates who were running. It was Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and a little bit John Edwards. So, and as opposed to today, where I feel like the party has itself together. The actual party apparatus was able to pull this thing off, add early voting. They registered, by the way, Kevin, 10,000 new Democrats during the early vote period. So a substantial, I mean, Nevada is only getting bluer. You know, it's all the blue states are getting bluer and the red states are getting redder. Well, Nevada is definitely getting bluer. And the, you know, the turnout was generally high, but they added that early caucusing function that really allowed us to get the vote, allowed the campaigns, I should say, to get their voters out before caucus day was even decided. So I, you know, looking at the polling going into it, and also looking at the way that Bernie has been polling, especially in the Latino community, which is a sizable portion of Nevada Democrats out here. I am a betting man, Kevin, and I did not lay any money down on Bernie Sanders to win the Nevada caucus, but I would have because, you know, it just seemed like he was going to run away with it in that way. But, you know, so that being said, I think the party is a lot stronger now, and the caucus in Nevada has never been any better run than it was this year. Now, it's still a caucus. You know, there are always going to be messy things going on with it. And, you know, it's not as precise as a primary. The viability threshold thing is weird. A lot of people on Twitter really don't appreciate, you know, when there's a tiebreaker in Nevada, you break the tie by pulling a deck of cards and highest face value card wins, you know, to
that's how they did it?
That's how they did it. Instead of
As opposed to a coin toss, which is in the how Iowa does it.
And Texas used to do a coin toss too. Yes, yeah. That is precisely
it's
right.
It's
instead,
a special gambling flavor.
Yeah, you know, Viva Las Vegas,
Nevada, folks.
Exactly. You
my
know,
goodness.
So you know, yeah, but you know, it definitely the process. People know how to caucus a lot more. As I was going through reconfirming the precinct chairs, I saw a number of names that were my volunteers in 2008 and also 2010 when I worked on Rory Reid's gubernatorial campaign. Those volunteers who were candidate volunteers back then are now part of the party apparatus and who have stepped up and who were precinct chairs. So there's a lot more institutional knowledge amongst Nevada Democrats that I think is also helping the process in Nevada be a lot stronger going forward. Now, in general, I don't like caucuses because they, you know, they are prohibitive and it's convoluted and that the card thing is you know, the tie breaking and all those sorts of weird rules and how the rural areas get more delegates than the urban areas and how people can win the delegate count but lose the popular vote. It doesn't make a lot of sense. You know what I mean? But that all being said, you know, Nevada has his game together in terms of running this caucus now, I think. And if they continue to caucus in the next Democratic presidential election cycle where there is a competitive primary, hopefully that won't be until 2028, but we'll see. I think that the caucus is only going to get stronger if they continue to do it, although I do get the sense that Nevadans truly do want to have a primary just because they're simply better.
Right. Well, it sounds like that goes for the rest of the country as well. And also, one thing I want to just highlight, you said something fairly quickly, but I want to make sure folks hear that point, which is that the party, the Nevada Democratic Party, did a lot of work to continue to register new voters to be members of the Democratic Party, 10,000 or so, just using this moment, this event, as a way to galvanize and energize people to do so. And expanding that electorate within the party has huge ramification when it comes to the general election. Because if you don't have a very strong party registration database, let's just say, by registering voters who may want to vote for your party or become a part of it, but just didn't have the time or didn't have anyone to come up to them to do voter registration physically, which is something that a lot of field organizers do as literally one of the first tasks when they get on the ground, it becomes a lot harder to galvanize these voters again to turn out and vote for your party's nominee come November. So those numbers, those voter registration capacity, which I think the Republicans are doing quite a bit as well this cycle, has very big ramifications coming in to November.
I will say this, Kevin, the good thing about caucuses is that because it forces you to build an apparatus in the party down to the precinct, it is a really wonderful thing for overall party building, because you are talking about organizing down to the precinct level, like a meaningful community meeting that has ramifications for which candidate wins delegates. And so caucuses are a lot more effective at driving voter registration. I don't know about a lot more effective, but caucuses are effective at driving voter registration because it forces the parties to actually get down to the nitty gritty and go out there and find new voters. The other thing too is you know, there were voters who were registered today. Like Nevada is a state where if you were like an unaffiliated voter and wanted to register as a Democrat, you could today and switch your party. If you were turning 18 before election day this year, if you were 17 right now but turn 18 before November, you would be able to register and vote in caucus today if you wanted to. So, you know, it's nice to have that access and have that opportunity to build that party. And actually, looking at the way that the Democratic Party in Nevada has grown over the last 12 years, I think the having now three competitive Nevada caucus cycles has been a big part of the reason why Nevada is getting bluer. So the only argument I have in favor of caucuses is that it really does help build the party.
Okay. So I want to wrap up this conversation. Any closing thoughts or feelings that you want to share with their audience before we wrap this one up?
You know, it's fun to be adjacent to the arena again. You know, I was with a lot of folks who I hadn't seen in a little bit, and you know, feel that energy of a campaign, even though it wasn't actually working for a candidate campaign like I'm used to. It was just very, very nice to be near that and to feel purposeful. And also, you know, this experience for me was really motivated by a want to make this process better, because quite frankly, you know, I think Democrats are getting, by and large, our butts kicked this primary cycle. You know, we can't agree on anything. And, you know, it's good to see this caucus go off, I think, the way that it was intended. We have a projected winner right now, and the caucuses close as of the recording of this. It's 5:41 right now in Nevada. The caucuses ended at 2 p.m. So, you know, literally we have a clear winner 3 hours later. And you know, there's not a whole lot of consternation over I won, you won, you know, do we know? So it's very positive experience. And if anything, Nevada to me is the only one of the first four primary states that kind of belongs in the first four primary states area, because it is such an ethnically and economically diverse state with different industries that drive the economy of the state of Nevada, and different ethnicities of people who have come to live here, especially in Clark County, where Las Vegas is. It really is, out of the first four early states, it is the most representative of America at large in terms of just looking like America, with Asians and Latinos and African Americans and you know, and Mormons and, you know, all those wonderful things. So it's a great state. And, you know, I am definitely against Iowa and New Hampshire always going first, but Nevada, I think, has a lot stronger claim to being an early state, simply because it's a lot more reflective of America. And so, yeah, go Nevada, battle-born state. Let's go.
Let's go. All right. Well, hope everybody enjoy listening to this episode and learn something about not just Nevada caucus itself, but also different multiple ways that you can get involved in politics, not just the campaigns or the candidates themselves, but also the party, if you want to experience that too. Obviously, make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast listening done, and follow all of our social media handle at Model Majority P on Twitter, at Model Majority Podcast on the Instagram. Tony, thank you so much again for bringing us the on-the-ground experience from the Nevada caucus. Have a safe drive home, buddy.
All right. Take care, everybody.